Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you live here on this Tuesday, April the 27th. 2021, 14 and a half minutes past the hour, and we thank the legendary James Meredith for coming on in hour number one. Certainly what James Meredith did in the civil rights movement is not to be forgotten by anyone. Remember, the first African-American student admitted to the racially segregated University of Mississippi. That event happened on the date of October 1st, 1962. That all went down. So again, we thank James Meredith for joining us today and discussing that event, but maybe more importantly, discussing issues of the day, because this issue continues and continues and continues, and we have the George Floyd trial, we have what happened in Columbus recently with a 16-year-old, so it's very, very fascinating, and we thank James Meredith for coming on in hour number one this morning. And do want to remind everybody, we've got a great week of programming here. Tomorrow morning at 8:10 a.m., we'll be joined by legendary attorney of Sam Shepard and O.J. Simpson. F. Lee Bailey will be on tomorrow morning live at 8:10 to discuss kind of race in America in the trials we've seen. He'll discuss the George Floyd trial and also the incident that happened in Columbus here recently, again with the 16-year-old girl and the police officers. Tomorrow morning at 9:10 a.m., we'll be joined by legendary comedian Shecky Green, one of our favorites, for the first time since Election Day, and he's going to tell you why he has not been on since Election Day, and it's a very interesting story you all will be interested to hear. So tomorrow morning, F. Lee Bailey and Shecky Green, and then coming up on Thursday morning at 8:10 a.m. to recap the first 100 days of President Joe Biden and also talk about any and all other current events in the world, we'll be joined live by former ABC News White House correspondent, co-host of Primetime Live, and co-host of the Sunday morning show on ABC, Sam Donaldson, Emmy Award-winning newsman. That will be Thursday at 8:10 a.m. So F. Lee Bailey, Shecky Green tomorrow, and Sam Donaldson on Thursday. But now we turn our attention this hour to local matters here in the city of Marion, and we have our monthly visit, which we're always interested and excited to do, in which we speak to the mayor of the city of Marion, Mayor Scott Schertzer. Mayor, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you, Scott. I tell you what, it's an honor to be on the same show as some of your guests coming up in the next couple of days, so I'm really excited and hope I can live up to their professionalism. Maybe not Shecky Green's, you know, comedic performances, but anyhow, we'll try.
Well, you know, Mayor, it's interesting, and just to touch on this, but in hour number one this morning, we had James Meredith on, who was the first African-American student admitted to the University of Mississippi in 1962, and to hear those stories, I think, are just very important. I don't think they're regional in any way.
No, you're right, and being a former history teacher, there's probably very little history taught about those kinds of things in the classrooms today. Now, I've been out of the classroom for 14 years, so maybe more is being taught than used to be taught, but the textbooks that were written when I was teaching had little to nothing in regards to a story like that.
Why do you think that is? Is there just not enough time? I think that's probably the reason given.
Yeah, I think mostly, I think it's probably more about teachers don't have the ability or the time to be to do what you might call creative teaching, to go off script, if you will, because their script is basically given to them at the beginning of the year for the tests that I think a lot of students are taking those tests right now, this week, this month. So you have to teach to the tests and make sure that the student body passes those tests so they could advance to the next grade. And it's unfortunate that you can't, you know, roll up your sleeves and really get into, you know, a bit of American history that is relevant to what is happening today in our own lives.
As a former teacher and someone who is married to a teacher, what do you think this pandemic, what will the long-lasting effects be on the public school system?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we've been hearing all along how it's difficult socially and psychologically on young students, young people. I can speak for my daughters who are, you know, almost 18 and 19 years old. I don't think the impact has been so great on them because we don't have to sit there with them and do their homework, and they're technologically advanced as most students are today, K through 12. But still, when you talk about K through, say, sixth grade maybe, and I'm just picking that, I have no scientific evidence to back it up, you know, there's a little bit more hands-on by the parents because they are remotely studying. I've got two nieces that are in second and third grade. I think it'll have a greater impact on their development than anything. But I think the older student body will be okay. They'll advance just fine. It's the younger ones that are more concerning.
Mayor, we talked to Ayers Ratliff last week, the Democratic city councilman in the second ward, and he had said that this committee that we've been hearing about to investigate Auditor Landon's, the issue with the $1.28 million, was going to be chosen at this week's city council meeting. Did that happen?
It did happen last night, yes.
Do we know who's on the committee at this point?
Yes, Jason Schauber is going to be the chairman. Ayers Ratliff. Excuse me. Jason Schauber, chairman. Ayers Ratliff will be on the committee, and Kai Mead will also be on the committee. And I believe they called their first committee meeting for May the 3rd, but that seemed to be more of an organizational meeting on May the 3rd as they prepare to hold hearings and committee meetings throughout the summer would be my guess. I think it's a great exercise of checks and balances. I do know that not everybody agrees, but that's kind of the world that we live in today. When we disagree with one another, we have more mediums to express our disagreements with one another. But I see this as a check and balance, the way the Founding Fathers set up the three branches of government. One can check the other, and I think that's what's happening here, and I'm okay with that.
As mayor and as a former city councilman, in your time, have you ever seen a committee formed like this to look at a city employee or something a city employee has done?
No. The only time a special committee had been convened in my tenure in municipal government was twice, and it was over the hospital lease with the city and the county. Once when I was on city council, and then once when I first became mayor, I believe there was a special committee convened to look into the hospital lease. Obviously, by the time I became mayor, a lot of the differences had been settled, and we came to a 30-year agreement with Marion General Hospital. So, no.
In a lot of people's mind, that could be the reason that some people are not in favor of this. But to answer that question, why has this particular situation warranted a special committee?
Well, that's a good question. I think that question's probably more applicable to the members of council that voted for it. it was largely voted down party lines. with some variations there, where there's only 9 voting members of city council. I think it's important to point out maybe to your listeners that as mayor, I'm a participant in these council meetings. They're not my council meetings. The council has their own rules. They follow their rules. They have parliamentary procedures, which they follow to the best of their ability, sometimes with advice from legal counsel. But this is a city council committee investigating, looking into, seeking the truth on what happened last June and why that almost $1.3 million didn't go to where it was supposed to go. And that's going to cause a ripple effect because we didn't pay the federal government the federal income tax withholdings, which could, I don't know, I'm not a tax preparer, but which could have implications for some of our employees. I hope not. I don't think so. But I just want to know the truth, and how do we prevent it from happening again? You know, we need to learn from our mistakes so we don't repeat those mistakes. It's like history. We need to learn from history so we don't repeat history, especially when it's not good history, which is sometimes the case.
For everybody who will know the results of what this committee finds, why does there need to be a committee? What information has not been ascertained by questioning city council meetings, conversations between city employees, in your opinion?
Well, I think the committee just formalizes everything. You know, the committee will come up with what I hope is a conclusion. I hope that I think most people view this as something negative. I think this should and could be viewed as something positive. You know, legislation may come out of what happened. I don't know what that legislation might be, but I think it's a real possibility that legislation could come from this investigation. And also, this is working in conjunction with a state audit. We don't know what the state auditors and what conclusions they might find and come to as a result of this happening. I know members of city council have specifically asked the state auditors to look into this specific situation, that had it, how it happened, why it happened, what do we do to prevent it. And really, that's why we do a state audit every year, is to make sure that we are a good keeper of the public's taxpaying dollars.
For all the people listening who maybe do not follow city council closely, do not take the paper, just are not that involved in city government, what is the focal point of this issue with Auditor Landon? Why is this such a big issue?
Well, I think that the city auditors is tasked with bookkeeping. That says that right in the Ohio Revised Code. And if you're not keeping accurate books, again, it could have that ripple effect through the city's finances and what council and the administration may agree to do with those particular finances. And there are also penalties and fines that could be levied against the city for not paying the federal income tax withholdings. We still don't know the answer to that question yet on whether that will be. And I think it's also important to ask the question of why did nobody knew about it? You know, why didn't? There's a lot of institutional knowledge on council. There's a lot of institutional knowledge in my administration. We could have been of assistance as opposed to having to seek the truth now and resolved it at the time that it happened. But that never happened.
Do we know why that was?
No, we don't.
Has the question been asked of the auditor?
I do know that the auditor initially came to me when the payroll clerk was taking a leave of absence because of the death in her family. And the auditor came to me because I offered my assistance, because what happens over there, again, has an effect on the city as a whole. And we said that we didn't know if my expertise within my administration could execute the payroll on the day that our employees would typically receive their paycheck, which would be a Friday. They came to us on a Wednesday with some of these issues and concerns that they had with their payroll. not divulging all of the truth, as we have now found out. But we didn't know that we could do it in a almost 24-36 hour period to execute the payroll in the manner that it should be done. And I told Auditor Landon that, and he said, "Okay, well, we're just going to go ahead." And your call. So assistance was offered, and assistance was rejected. Now, it was rejected politely. I don't want to misrepresent the dialogue that took place between his office and my office when we had that in June of last year. But obviously mistakes were made, and we did find out through questioning in council committees that they were aware that the mistake was made and decided not to divulge that information to anybody until it was too late. And I don't have the timeline in front of me, but I want to say early February of this year is when the ripple effect of the mistake that was made in June of last year came to everybody's attention.
When we first talked about it, I think it was the morning after a lot of people became aware that this had happened. You were just coming back from COVID at that time, and you had said there were a lot of questions that you wanted answered personally. A few months later now, have those questions been answered to your satisfaction that you wanted to know?
Well, I think some of them have been. I think the committee and I would like a little bit more clarity on things. Want to make sure that the auditor knows that my administration is here to help. I told my administration from the very beginning, we are here to assist the auditor. He does not have a lot of institutional knowledge in that office, nor does he have institutional knowledge when it comes to municipal government in general. And that institutional knowledge is paramount into being successful at your job. So I told everybody to assist, but we're not here to do his job. That's what he was elected to do. But we're here to be a partner and help out. So I think clarity on some of those questions is still needed. And I think maybe that's why you have a select special committee to look into in depth. That's their focus of attention, to seek the truth, to get to the truth.
Mayor, one of the things about this, I think, that has been confusing to a lot of citizens, when Ayers was on last week, he talked about a strained relationship with Auditor Landon. You have talked about the relationship not being the best between you and he. And we've heard the press releases, and some of them have been published in the paper, and certainly if not in the paper, they've been online. Why is there that relationship? Have you ever had a relationship with an elected official like this in your tenure?
Well, as far as the press releases go, whether they be in traditional media or on social media, I'd like to point out that they're not coming from me, okay? So a relationship is a two-way commitment that two individuals or a group of individuals have. So those press releases are not coming out of my office from me. I have a standing committee or a standing meeting with the city auditor that goes back to my first year in office, because it is important to have an open line of communication between the mayor's office and the city auditor, because they are the bookkeepers of the funds. We're getting ready to receive millions of dollars in ARPA money, commonly referred to as the stimulus money passed by Congress. So as we go through these federal dollars and decide how they're going to be spent and best be spent for the city of Marion, that relationship needs to grow stronger. And I think in light of what has happened in February and some of the committees and the special select committee to look into it, Auditor Landon and I have resumed our monthly meetings. We met in March. We met in April. And we have our first scheduled meeting in May is May the 6th. So I hope we'll continue to meet monthly, because, again, it's important to have that relationship. So I think that's key to point out.
Just on this particular issue, there was a timeline released to the media, and I believe a other people involved in this by Auditor Landon on April the 1st. Did you get a chance to see that timeline?
I did. It came to me late. I didn't get it in a timely manner, and that's fine. Council was the ones who really, you know, made the request for a timeline, and I think that that timeline should be looked at by the Special Select Committee.
What was your feeling as you looked over it?
Well, I think I used this analogy the last time we talked about it. If there's four people standing at an intersection and there's a traffic accident, four people are going to have a different perspective on things. I'm not saying that his timeline is wrong. I think it's just a different perspective, and I have a different perspective as well. But some things in that timeline can be verified and authenticated through emails and phone records, and maybe that's what needs to be done. I don't know. I guess more than anything, I just asked the question of why didn't you tell anybody? I don't think it's right to spend 2021 money on a 2020 bill, and that's essentially what happened. When you spend $1.3 million, that should go before City Council, and they should appropriate and authorize it and approve it, and that never happened. When anybody is spending that kind of money in government without the consent of the opposed or the other branch of government, that's a concern, because it brings into question the true checks and balances that we have here in Mary Municipal Government.
When we look down this timeline, and not to go over this or read it on the air because it's rather lengthy, when you get to the bottom of the timeline that was submitted, there is just a line at the bottom, and it says, if you remove all the politically motivated conversations and speeches, you will find that we discovered a mistake and attempted to correct it in a proper and timely manner. Now, when you put that at the bottom of a press release, what does that say to you?
Well, it tells me that they finally have admitted they made the mistake, but they admitted it after you got caught making the mistake. So I don't know what to make of it. We serve in political positions, and yes, there is going to be a certain amount of politics that exists in political positions. Your listeners may find that unfortunate, but I will say, as I've said many, many times before, that, you know, about 95% of the things we do are not political, but we live in a heightened political environment, so maybe that 95 has dipped down to 90%. So still a vast majority of the things that we deal with are non-political.
As you had said earlier, when it came to this committee, that a lot of these votes did fall pretty close to party lines. Is that just a sign of the times? Is that political motivation? What is that locally?
Well, I think regardless of what side of the political aisle you're on, we're living in this new environment of never admit you made a mistake, never admit you did wrong, never ask for help, because there is this belief that it's a sign of weakness. And I would argue the opposite point, that I think it shows a sign of strength when you can stand up and be responsible for your own actions. I mean, after all, as parents, isn't that what we try and teach our children, and what we want our children to do is to take responsibility for your actions, stand up and own it, and ask for help and ask for assistance?
There are some other things to talk about here, but one of the things that the big question, I think, that most people have in regard to this at this point is, did Auditor Landon have permission, without telling anybody, to pay the IRS after he had paid the money to the state before the money from the state was recovered? Ayers Ratliff said pretty bluntly on this program last week that he did not have that authority. What's your understanding on that issue?
Well, from my understanding, involvement in municipal government, I would agree with Mr. Ratliff on that note.
should there, and not what they should be, but should there be consequences because that was done and it was not okay to do that?
Well, I think that gets into a bigger issue in society today, is that there are not consequences for our actions when we do things like this. And yes, I mean, I'm not suggesting jail or prison. The consequences may be a finding in the state audit. That's a consequence. But we need to have consequences for our actions.
Final question on this, based off of that. I asked Ayers last week if he thought that the auditor should be removed because of that, or if he should resign because of this, that he did admit it was a mistake. And Ayers said if it were him, yes, he would resign. Do you think either of those things should happen?
I don't know. I think I'm going to withhold judgment until the select committee has finished its investigation into the matter.
Would there be a definitive issue that the committee would answer that would make you feel one way or the other on that?
That's awful hypothetical. I don't know how you answer a question when you don't all have all the facts and you don't have the truth.
And let's move, and we'll talk about that in the future, but let's move on to some other issues. And that's not hypothetical. We'll move on to that in truth and theory. You know, the Aquatic Center, what do we know about the year? We're still in the pandemic. What do we know about the Aquatic Center for the upcoming summer?
Well, we have said all along this spring that we're going to do everything we can to open it. We are preparing the Aquatic Center to open. However, the problem that we have now is we don't have lifeguards. I need 25 to 30 certified lifeguards, and that's not a choice. That's not a city rule. That's a state rule, based upon the capacities of the Aquatic Center. That's how many we need, and we have 7 applicants. And I believe the last time I checked that only 2 of those applicants had their certification. So I cannot open an aquatic center with only 2 certified lifeguards. So we're very concerned. We've been pushing that out on social media. Our school resource officers have been pushing it out in the schools. They've even been pushing out in the county schools. I know that the YMCA had a lifeguard class. I don't have that information in front of me, but if any of your listeners are interested in being a lifeguard, I would highly recommend that you put in a call to the Marion YMCA and check into that class. Those classes are very expensive. If you're a member of the Y, you get a discount. If you're not a member of the Y, you could pay a couple $100 for that lifeguard certification. So Ohio Means Jobs, the old Job and Family Services, has offered some money to help defray that cost. So if you're interested in those classes, I would encourage you to call Amy O'Connor. She is our HR clerk here in the city government, and she can get you in touch with the right people to see if those grants and scholarships, if you will, are available for those lifeguard classes. But without 25 to 30 lifeguards, we can't. It would not be safe. So we have kind of said that the Monday after Mother's Day, which I think Mother's Day is May the 16th, we're going to have to make a decision, because our first day of being open would be the 29th, the Saturday before Memorial Day. And so that's less than 2 weeks, and we'll have to make that decision very quickly and let the public know that due to the lack of lifeguards, we are going to be unable to open the Aquatic Center. Now, here's another scenario. Let's say we get 15 to 20 lifeguards. Still not what we need, but maybe we can run a modified schedule this summer. Maybe we're only open on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or some variation of that. Obviously, it's always weather permitting that the Aquatic Center is open, but we are looking at running a modified schedule if we do get enough lifeguards to even do that.
We have learned recently, I believe just as recent as yesterday, that Cedar Point, Kings Island are going to open this year. They are not going to follow as strict of mandates in regard to the pandemic, as they did last year. I believe mask mandates are going to go by the wayside at Cedar Point and Kings Island, if what I was reading was correct. The Ohio State Fair has said they are not going to have people from the outside in. It's going to be more of an agricultural-based event this year. The Marion County Fair, on the other hand, I think is pretty well said that it's going to go on. We don't know how or what at this point. It's a big question, but all that, do you think that if the Aquatic Center does open, there will have to be restrictions in place? It didn't open last year during the pandemic. We'll still be in the pandemic this year. The Marion County Fair with the Ohio State Fair not opening. How do you feel about all this?
Well, I've said from the very beginning of this pandemic that I will take the directions when it comes to public health from Marion Public Health, Ohio Public Health, and the CDC. And we will continue to follow those guidelines and be in compliance with those three organizations. And yes, even sometimes I recognize that there's somewhat of a contradiction between them occasionally. But those are the guidelines that we will follow. If we have to have restrictions at the Marion Aquatic Center that are put in place by those three agencies, then we will do everything we can to follow them and make sure that the pandemic does not become an issue at the Marion Aquatic Center if we're able to open.
As the school year is drawing to a close here, what have you made of the decisions in the last year, now that we look back at it, of the schools, of the Marion Public Health Department, of the start of the vaccinations? How has this all played out in your mind?
Well, I think you can take a look at the past year and maybe put it into different chunks or classifications. I think the past few months since we've started vaccinating has gone very well. We meet on Mondays. I think you know that because you meet with Tracy or somebody on her staff. But the last number we had, 31.5% of Marionites have been vaccinated. We're still a long way from that 70% that we keep hearing about in national news. I don't have anything scientific to back up that 70 some odd percent to get that herd immunity. I believe Tracy Kinsler, Marion Public Health, said about every 2 weeks we're going up about 4%. So if we're going up 4% every 2 weeks, we got a long way to go to get to 70%. And I do believe that the vaccinations is the key to as normal as we can get to in the COVID world that we live in. So I think that the vaccinations have gone very well. I've heard very good comments and remarks about the vaccination efforts here in Marion County. I think when you look back on the early days when we just shut everything down, I don't want to call it a knee-jerk reaction. Maybe it was the right thing to do, but in retrospect, looking back now, it was rather radical to close everything down all at once like we did. But of course, we know more today about COVID-19 than we did then. I think as Americans, we are on this roller coaster. We see those peaks and valleys, and those peaks and valleys center around social events in our society. Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, we're kind of in a peak. We're coming out of a peak right now because of Easter and spring break. So those are those social events that we still haven't quite figured out how to navigate those social gatherings and social events, and that's why we see the peaks and valleys. So, look, I think it'll be better analyzed a couple years out of the pandemic, which, yes, I do believe that we will overcome this. There has been great pain and suffering. Speaking as one who had COVID-19, it's horrible. I mean, if anybody listening has had it, you may have had a mild version, a medium version, or a full-strength version, but I don't know which one I had, but there were a couple days where you don't eat, you don't do anything, you don't talk to anybody, you don't want to see anybody. So it's challenging and stressing on the human body, that's for sure.
We are hearing a lot more as we learn more about COVID-19, about the long haulers, the people who have symptoms after COVID is over. Have you seen any of that in your particular case?
I have not. I resumed my full workouts. I work out Monday through Friday for, I don't know, hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on the day. I resumed my workouts within a week after having COVID. Now, I will tell you that my energy level was way down, and I could not do what I did in my workouts pre-COVID. But as I built that stamina back and that energy level back, I am back to doing the lifting the weights that I was lifting before, and you know, running on the treadmill as I did before COVID. So, it took a couple of weeks to get back to that level that I was at pre-COVID. So, no, I have seen no ill after effects of COVID with myself personally or anybody in my family.
We have had some questions in regard to downtown Marion about the street being blocked off next to the Harding Hotel for a period of time, about possibly some more diagonal parking being put in. Is there any update on these things?
Yeah, as far as the street by the Harding Hotel, that went along a lot longer than anybody thought, including the contractors or the owner of the building. While they were doing some of the work on the, it's the west wall where the bricks blew out, they recognized that there were other things that needed to be tended to preserve the Harding Hotel as we know it. And they have been doing that the past, I don't know, 6-8 weeks. I'm hoping they're going to wrap things up here very quickly. We were able to open the southbound lane off of Center Street for a while, and then they brought in a bigger crane or bigger lift, if you will, to do more work, and they needed to close that lane again. So we don't have an opening date yet, but I think it will probably happen the 1st of May. The diagonal parking in the block on Main Street between Center and Church is complete. That was finished up on Sunday. There are some growing pains that go along with that when you change people's traffic patterns that they have become accustomed to for all their life or most of their adult driving lives. It's a change for them that they have to get used to. We are going to put more signage up because in that block that I just mentioned, it's one lane southbound, one lane northbound with turning lanes, and the diagonal parking is in place. It created more diagonal parking, and it's really more of an economic development effort to create more of an economic opportunity in that region of downtown that has been thriving and growing really more than anywhere else when it comes to restaurants and shops and redoing the storefronts, etc.
What else is going on in the city that we are not aware of at this point?
Wow, that's a really open question. I mentioned the ARPA money. We're still trying to figure out, like most local governments, we think we know how much we're going to get. We think it's about $7.3 million. Now, this is money passed by the federal government that is exclusively to be used in local governments. I have heard that we may get it in two installments, one installment this year, one installment next year. We've heard that it has to be all spent by December 31st of 2024. When it comes to this type of grant money, it's been my personal policy as mayor not to use it to hire staff, because when you hire staff, that's a 30 to 35 year commitment for that employee potentially that we need to be prepared for. So we will not be hiring staff. However, we may be using some of that money to do contract work, which would mean that we would hire people, but not to work for the city government, but to perform a duty for city government, such as our IT department. So we have two individuals that have been working in our IT department, And as you know, technology has grown dramatically in the past 14 years since I've been in office, and everybody has a computer on their desk and has other IT needs. So we're looking at maybe doing some consulting to complement or supplement our IT department. Most of that money will be used for one-time capital improvements. Those could be physical improvements on our buildings. Those could be capital improvements such as vehicles, equipment, etc., etc. I've got two locker rooms in the basement of City Hall. The women's locker room is absolutely deplorable. Having never gone into that locker room until the pandemic to see how deplorable it was, it's very small, and the women on our police department are growing, and I believe will continue to grow. So they need a locker room that is more conducive to their needs in City Hall. So we expect to make that type of a capital improvement, just to give you an example.
In our final 5 minutes here, Mayor, since we talked last, we'd had the sheriff on, Sheriff Bales, and we'd had Prosecutor Grogan on to talk about a moment, and it will be a moment in Marion history, and it will be a year in Marion history that I think will live for a long time, the trial, the conviction, and the sentencing of Judge Jason Warner, who now is incarcerated along with his wife for a 2-year period. When you look back at that now, what do you think of it? What do you make of it?
Well, I think the judicial system works. I think the conviction was the right decision. But as I said in the paper last week about the Chauvin trial, I think we all need to be mindful that we all don't agree that the punishment was appropriate. I get that. There are always two sides, but I do believe that that was the right decision. The judicial system worked in that case. I believe it worked in the Chauvin case. And we'll let history judge us in a few years down the road.
When the sentencing was happening, during the sentencing trial, Mrs. Warner and Judge Warner were allowed to speak. And one of the things that seemed to shock a lot of people the next day on Facebook were the statements made there, and particularly by Judge Warner. He said he made the decision after the crash due to the mental state of his wife. He said he was never driving on the night of the accident, and he did not incite Julia to flee from the scene. Since the accident, Jason said he feels horrible about it and continues to lose sleep. That really shocked a lot of people. The statement, just so I have it right here, that Julia made was, the accident was just the last straw that broke the camel's back for me. Quite frankly, when I looked at Colton's car after being slammed by the airbag, it was foggy. I didn't know what to do. I panicked. I left. I should not have done that. I know that now. And she also talked about prior to the accident that she was not in the best state of mind due to the pandemic, attempting to teach remotely, and political protests going on at the time. Because of technology, a lot of people watch this on Channel 6 on the internet. What did you make of those statements? They shocked people.
Well, I understand how it may have shocked people, but you know, we talked about consequences and being held accountable for your actions at the top of our interview, and I think that the judicial system will hold them accountable for their actions, regardless of what they said in their closing remarks.
Were you surprised of the interest in that trial?
Oh, heavens no. You have a sitting judge and his wife who did what they did and go on trial for it? Absolutely not.
When it's looked back at, you have a judge who I believe in trial, Judge Cosgrove, the judge in that trial, said this is a judge who handed out, campaigned on, running, or giving out hard sentences. Is there a great irony there to you?
Sure there is. Absolutely there's an irony there.
And the final question on this particular subject in our final few minutes here, you knew Jason Warner. I don't know how well. What do you make of the man? Does it assimilate at all with the man you knew before this incident?
You know, that's a really good question, and I guess based on what I knew of him or what I thought I knew of him, no, it doesn't. But, you know, I guess, you know, he has an opportunity to serve his time to society for his crimes, and we'll see what he does with himself afterwards.
We have 2 minutes left, so I'm going to throw this aquatic question at you, because this has been a big question for a long time. You vetoed the aquatic center twice when it was being offered to be built, when the money was supposed to go that way, but everybody wanted it to succeed. The narrative, since it's been open, has been it does not make money, that it loses money every year. Last year it did not open at all. What, now that we look back at it, What has the tenure of the Aquatic Center been, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's been challenging. I said all along that we built too big and too expensive. I wanted a new pool. We needed a new pool. But I think at the time, council had stars in their eyes, and they were sold a bill of goods by the consultant that came up and sold them this particular Aquatic Center. And once we learned about how many attendants that we were going to have per day, it was unattainable. It was unrealistic that we would get that many people per day to cash flow this monstrosity that we have built. But I was in favor of a new pool with certain amenities. If you had just cut out the lazy river, which was almost $1 million, we would be in better shape today. As you know, we had to refinance the pool last year because we weren't going to be able to make the payments after 10 years of making interest-only payments. So we've had to refinance it. We had to close it last year, and at this stage of the game, as we sit here talking right now, we don't know the outcome of the pool this year. But yes, pools have always, not just in our community, but they've always been a pull on the general funds because they don't cash flow.
Mayor Scott Schertzer, Mayor, I always thank you for coming on and being very candid, and it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. See you. Bye-bye.
Mayor Scott Schertzer, there you go. A Voice of the People with Linda Sims today, 4:10 to 5 p.m. The Adam the Computer Guy Show, 2:10 to 3 p.m. For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
It was going to come again to WWGH. Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers.
Speedy delivery.
Yay! Boy, that sure sounds familiar.
The place is WWGH 107.1 FM. Welcome back.
I'm going to do one of my